The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
He is an Army veteran.
Duty, honor, country.
And former district attorney for Colorado's 18th Judicial District.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Most important, he's a father and a proud American.
Americans love a winner.
He is George Brockler. And this is The George Show on News Talk 710 KNUS.
I'm brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.
Everything that guy just says, boo.
Welcome back to The George Show. I am joined in studio, as I am every Saturday, by Super Attorney Phil Harding, my friend, my former colleague, and my actual attorney for the collision that I had. Phil, big question for you. Listen, the government does a lot of things poorly, and that includes sometimes setting us up for injury, whether it's being clipped by an RTD bus or a pothole that you fall into or some other thing. How do people sue the man?
Well, first of all, you only get, for example, if it's a slip and fall, that's a two-year statute of limitations. If, let's say, you're hit by RTD, that's a three-year statute of limitations. But you don't get that statute of limitations unless you send a special notice to the government. And it's called a GIA notice, and it stands for the Governmental Immunity Act. And you have to send that within 182 days.
What happens if you forget or you miss it?
If you miss it, then you cannot bring a lawsuit.
That's it. It's over.
That's it. Remember, we came from England like a long, long time ago.
Yeah, a couple years.
Yeah. And so we adopted some of the laws. And one of the laws back then was the king can do no wrong. Well, we don't have a king, but we have the government. And so you can only sue the government for a certain number of exceptions. And one of those is you have to give them notice within that 182 days. If you don't, no matter how great your case is, it could be dismissed.
If you do it, though, you preserve it for the whole three-year statute of limitations or 2 years if it's a slip and fall?
That's correct.
Are there any limitations on what liability the government has to pay for you? Is it like, well, they're only going to pay $50?
It is. And it has changed. So right now it's $250,000 that you can get from the government. But yes.
That ain't a ton.
That is not a ton.
Not when someone's had some catastrophic injuries. That is really nothing.
All right. And so that's why I just stress to everyone all the time, especially on your car insurance, I want you to max out your uninsured, underinsured. Because if it's the government that did something, you're going to need that on top of it.
Thank you, Phil Harding. If you have questions or an issue like this, please reach out to Phil at hlaw.com, hlaw.com, or call him at 303-762-9500, 303-762-9500. When I had a collision, I called Phil. You should too.
The George Show with George Brockler on News Talk 710, KNUS.
Love me some Phil Harding on Saturday morning. Frankly, any morning is Phil Harding time. Listen, when you find yourself in a position to need an attorney because someone has hurt you, and not because they intended to, but by accident or what otherwise, call this guy, call Phil Harding, please. And when you do, tell him his buddy George, his client George, sent you there. This dude will take great, great care of you and get the outcome that you deserve. Now, listen, we have on the line with us some, it's a doubleheader today in terms of the Common Sense Institute. We have on the line a VIP in his own right, Chris Brown from the Common Sense Institute. Chris, is the title economist extraordinaire, or what do they call you out there?
Good morning, George. Yeah, I heard you reference that earlier, and I'm going to have to talk to Kristen to try to get that that upgrade.
Do they call you chief? What's your title?
The vice president of policy and research.
I got to be honest, extraordinaire just sounds better. I don't know. It's all encompassing. Anyway, you have that conversation with Kristen. I wanted to have you on. We've had you on before. Folks that have listened to the show have listened to you before. You guys came out with very recently a new assessment or study of a potentially proposed public option. And one of the things you reference is, just to set the stage, is that last year there was sort of this failed or withdrawn attempt to put a public option into place through the legislature, probably because of the pandemic. But you guys took a look at that and started to analyze it in terms of the data. Before we get into what you've discovered and your thoughts on this thing, has there been a new public option dropped yet in the legislature, or do you expect one this session?
Yeah, thanks, George. Yeah, so So thus far, the bill has not been introduced yet. A draft is circulating, and the sponsors have made some pretty clear comments on the direction they're going, but no bill has been introduced just yet.
Those folks that you have heard of being sponsors, is this a bipartisan bill? Is this going to be a party line bill?
Not clear on exactly who the full sponsors are, but at the moment sponsored by Democrat.
That's a shocker to me. Now, tell folks that may not know what the term means, what is a public option when it comes to health care?
Good question. And frankly, it has come to mean a lot of different things. Maybe backing up a little bit, this debate started in 2019 when the legislature passed a bill requiring a public option to be studied. So it required a study that was produced in late 2019. And then, as you said, a public option bill was introduced last year that, because of COVID, was pulled and not moved forward, and then will be reintroduced this year. But, to your question of what the public option is, our understanding of what will be introduced this year is an entirely different design than what was recommended through the state report and even introduced last year. But maybe in most direct terms I can, a public option is a way for primarily state government now to intervene in insurance, health insurance markets through controlling prices in some form. Last year, it was recommended to mandate a price schedule for what insurance could pay hospitals in the individual market. And this year, it's a combination of price targets for the private market. So they're suggesting that private companies have to reduce their insurance on the individual market, their prices by 20% relative to prices this year over the next 3 years. And if they don't, the state would create a new authority that would essentially offer a new standardized insurance plan at the prices that the government sets.
A couple thoughts on that, Chris. One is, I don't see what the controversy is, given how efficient and effective government is at really every program it tackles. And it keeps prices low all the time. Look at education. I don't understand the controversy there. I'm being tongue-in-cheek with you, buddy. And then the second thing is, you talked about the demand in the potential bill to have businesses decrease health insurance costs on the other side by 20%. That suggests to me that, man, health prices here and prices for hospitalizations in Colorado must be through the roof. Is that true?
Well, to your first point, if they've found the right way to keep prices low, and there are no unintended consequences or adverse effects, or the costs are not being shifted somewhere else, then let's try this in some other markets too. But I think, to your point, that's not really how the economy and how things work. Specifically on insurance prices, when this issue really kind of resurfaced, and I should say that public option was debated in the Affordable Care Act reform in 2000, going back a decade, and was pulled out of the Affordable Care Act. And now it's resurfaced over the last couple of years. Washington State is the only state to have introduced and adopted and implemented.
And it was hugely successful, right?
Excuse me?
And it was hugely successful.
In its first year of being introduced, no, premiums have actually gone up in aggregate in Washington State. And, the design of Washington's public option is a little bit different. But, what I would say to your question on prices, in 2018, I'm looking at average benchmark premium. So that's the average premium for the plan that the federal government uses to establish their tax credits and how much they provide in offsets through the individual market, you know, Colorado ranked 32nd, okay? So it was below average in prices. You know, fast forward.
Hold on, we rank what?
So in 2018, ranked 32nd, okay? So of all 50 states, ranked in the bottom half.
Now, is that bottom half, is that good or bad? Like, is 50 good or is 50 bad?
50 was bad in that regard.
Okay, so we're towards the, okay, I got it.
High. Yeah. Fast forward to, you know, to rates in this year's plan, so 2021, and Colorado ranks sixth lowest, so good. So sixth from the lowest in those average benchmark premiums. So, and without this public option. And so we've seen a 25% decrease in premiums in the individual market, in this average benchmark premium, which has been a faster reduction than both the national average and, you know, and Washington State, if we use that as a comparison, given they introduced the public option plan.
Well, Chris Brown from Common Sense Institute, why is that? Why have we seen such a dramatic reduction?
Well, it's really, you know, it's twofold. One, you know, and this is reflected in the national average coming down. You know, the Affordable Care Act, you know, referred, you know, Obamacare, or, you know, this was the major federal reform from a decade ago, had major repercussions and changes to the individual market. And so the markets took time to adjust. So on one hand, we are now far enough out from that, and we've seen relatively less regulatory reform, which has caused things to stabilize. But on top of that, Colorado passed, the main driver would be the fact that Colorado passed a reinsurance program 2 years ago, which has taken a lot of the risk out of the individual market. It comes at a cost. It came at the cost of a higher fee and tax on hospitals and insurance providers, but it has, you know, been relatively successful in driving premiums down quite substantially.
So let me just recap, as we're talking to Chris Brown from Common Sense Institute, on this potential public option, which is going to drop at some point this session. And if I'm guessing right, they'll drop it with just enough time to rush it through at the end and get it signed off on. But here's what I've heard so far. One, Colorado has some of the lowest average insurance premiums on the individual market in America. Colorado has lower hospital reimbursement rates than most other states in America. And this was tried in Washington State and had the opposite effect of actually increasing premiums. So far, have I accurately described the situation?
You know, with you're 3 for 3. The early results in Washington have not been what was touted. So 3 for 3. I don't have any prize for you, but that's
so. So wait a minute. The prize is, I guess, I'm just aghast at, then what is the justification they're putting forward for doing this?
Yeah, so, you know, our effort in providing this research and you know, this is the we've now released this week our fifth, you know, paper related to this topic over the last 2 years, and it's really been widening the discussion on who is impacted and what those impacts are, because the goal is to, you know, benefit a few individuals in the individual market, really at the expense of sort of the rest of the healthcare stakeholders. That includes, you know, employers who are buying or providing coverage to their employees. That includes hospitals. That includes doctors. So there are limited benefits, and if you can force premiums down for people in the individual market, they will undoubtedly benefit. The last year's legislation and associated analysis indicated you'd reduce the uninsured rate very slightly. So there's some incremental.
And is this, though, is
that,
Chris, is that the justification for this? That, hey, we have so many uninsured and this will do wonders for that?
Well, you know, I think originally there might have been that intent, but I think some of this analysis and that was done last year and then the results in Washington State, you know, it brought down the uninsured rate in Washington State by 0.23%.
That's like so, half a person or something.
It is about 1,100 people in the entire state of Washington. So I think that was maybe one of the proposed intentions of this. But the other is, you know, individual insurance premiums are high in some parts of the state or were high in some parts of the state. And when this discussion really started, as you know, as the numbers showed, they were a lot higher. But, you know, in those interim years, and as we've seen either other policy or, you know, market stabilize, it's hard to sort of suggest that there's that same sort of level of evidence that there was just a couple of years ago.
Does this thing, do you guys come up with a, and I guess without seeing the details of the bill, you can't know, like what the dollar amount cost to the system or the individual patient, user, Coloradan, some sort of dollar-driven metric here?
So, yeah, to your point, until the bill is introduced, we won't have a real strong sense of the impact. But last year, we, through our modeling, and working with the National Actuarial Consulting Firm, estimated that last year's bill would have essentially cut revenue to hospitals between $530 million and $1.1 billion.
That's a lot.
Without, and again, the key point here is you are cutting what you pay for in care, but you are not lowering the underlying costs or improving you know, sort of the competitive markets in any way. And so you are cutting revenue
what covers
and not
that,
reducing costs.
What covers that gap?
Well, you know, that's the critical question that we really want to force legislators, policymakers debating this to have. Because you could either see, you know, providers, hospitals, doctors cut services, cut staff, cut access to care in a way that might be detrimental to different regions of the state or different individuals. And so you have to, you know, maybe make cuts that can hurt access, or, you know, you would increase this cost shifting, which already occurs in the healthcare market, where private insurers and primarily businesses covering their employees would face higher prices to cover these relatively lower payments from the individual market. So there's this cross subsidization or cost shifting which occurs already, which would be exacerbated.
And as you know, when you increase the cost of labor by making it more and more expensive to keep and maintain employees through increased insurance costs and all that stuff, you get more you get less employees because it costs more and more to have them. This feels like it dovetails pretty nicely with Kristen's discussion earlier, and that is here is one more thing that is going to be tacked on to the private business community that is going to discourage them from wanting to create more jobs, which is what we need to get out of this hole that we're in.
Yeah, I mean, this is about the quality. This is about, you know, and it's about the quality of healthcare and the industry as well, without a doubt. And, you know, the impacts are one thing, and the impacts and who is impacted and broadening that discussion is critical. You know, with the changes in this year's bill, I really have an interest in having, you know, a broader public discussion on the mechanisms of the law as well. You actually mentioned it sort of prior to introducing me. I heard you say, you know, talking about that the government can grant, by establishing a state authority, they can grant themselves, you know, essentially, you know, powers through the force of law that are different.
Oh, yeah. An unfair advantage, of course.
You know, one of those we're seeing likely is that, you know, this is called a public option because it's being touted as it would only be available among, you know, among other private insurance options. However, providers, hospitals, and doctors would have to accept the state authorities' public option plan. That's different than even, say, Medicaid today, where, you know, providers have an option of whether or not to accept Medicaid, and if they can actually incur maybe those lower payments, and if they can make their business model work. That discretion, again,
goes out the window.
Might not even be available. That's right. And
that's
so
amazing.
The mechanism here is very important as well, establishing a state authority to compete directly against private businesses, potentially with very different rules of the game, with an increased risk to Colorado taxpayers because of the fact that, you know, your state is now in the insurance game. And so there's a lot to the mechanics as well as the impacts here.
Chris Brown, I could talk to you all day about this kind of stuff. You guys put out great, great, nonpartisan, economic, number-driven data. I love it. So folks can go to commonsenseinstituteco.org. Is it org, Chris?
.org, that's right.
.org, and find this and all the other research that they do. I encourage you to do it. Chris, thanks for taking time out of your Saturday. Good luck with this snow that hasn't quite yet gotten here, but we've been promised by the WeatherBug app on my phone that we'll be here by 9.
My kids have already had their snow stuff on. So
they're just staring out the window like, how about now? How about now?
Yeah,
good luck, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, George.
Chris Brown from the Common Sense Institute. Go check it out at their website, commonsenseinstitutecu.org. We are going to come back, and we're going to come back with Ray Harlan, who's going to talk to us about another piece of legislation you ought to be aware of that's going to increase your chances of being a victim of crime. George Brockler on The George Show at 710 KNUS.
Now, back to The George Show with George Brockler on News Talk 710 KNUS.
George Brockler back with you on The George Show on 710 KNUS. I want to get right to our VIP line. So nice of Ray Harlan to allow us to reschedule him from the end of last hour, largely because we were just going to run out of time with him, and he's got too many good things to say. Ray from Colorado Victims for Justice. Sir, thank you for being so accommodating with our crazy schedule here.
George, I'm glad to do it. It's an honor to be on your show.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me.
For sure. And we heard from Cindy Graham earlier about one of the bills that's problematic for victims. There's another one, though, and this one, really a head-scratcher for me. It's called SB 62. It is sponsored by Senator Pete Lee and Representative Adrian Benavidez, at least at the moment. Tell us about this bill and what is troubling to you about it.
The bill has a long title, but the key words in the title are safely reduce jail populations. It's complicated. It has a number of facets, each of which tries to reduce jail populations. And the easiest part to understand is that it would give sheriffs the authority to turn away people who are sent to jail. In other words, if a sheriff felt like this particular jail had too many people, was in danger of being overcrowded, he could simply refuse to accept anybody else and let people go free who would otherwise go to jail. Now, he can't do this arbitrarily. He can't just say, "Oh, I like this guy, we'll let him go free, and the next guy you go to jail." He has to set up some sort of standards, which presumably would release people who had committed lower-level felonies and keep people with higher-level felonies in jail. But that's the easy one part to understand.
That one doesn't bother me as much, Ray, because I'll say this. We elect our sheriffs, and most elected sheriffs are public safety-minded. They get it. So if they had to do that, I don't mind them having the tools. And then they could be held accountable, too. But the parts you're getting to are the scarier parts.
Yes, they are. The scariest part is, to understand this, a little bit of background. Colorado has six classes of felony. The worst class is class one. That's very small number of crimes. Class one is murder and variations of murder.
Well, and there's a kidnapping, sex assault one that can get up there, but you're right.
Right. And it gets on down to class six, which is a little bit worse than misdemeanors. Now, this bill would prohibit police from arresting someone who commits a Class 4, Class 5, or Class 6 felony, with some exceptions. And Class 4 felonies are can be pretty serious.
Yes, they can.
I printed out the law regarding class four, the list of class four felonies from the statute, runs to 14 pages, and it includes things like criminal extortion, enticement of a child, that is, enticement of a child to sexual assault on a child, unlawful termination of pregnancy, stalking, third-degree arson, robbery, theft, burglary.
The one thing about about some of those that you read, though, if they are a victim rights crime, they don't apply. This thing doesn't apply to it. So some
that's
of those,
correct.
Victims, but there are some, that, and you're probably getting to this list, but like burglary of your business. I mean,
right.
What this would in essence say is if somebody breaks into your business and steals stuff and the police catch them red-handed, cannot take them to jail, have to issue them the equivalent of a speeding ticket and cut them loose right there.
That's right. They can only issue a summons, and a speeding ticket is a summons. A summons
that's
is just
right.
a piece of paper that says you are required to go to court on a certain date at a certain time. And speeding tickets are the most obvious example of that. But some of the crimes that where arrest would be prohibited are even worse. Arson is one. A person can blow up your car in your driveway, and if police observe that, they cannot. If this bill passes, they cannot arrest.
Think about
person.
That. Think about that, man. They could steal your car. Catch them
yes.
in your stolen car, and they just got to cut them loose. Can't take
right.
them to jail.
Right. And they split hairs. Let me give you an example. I'm going to read now, this language might bother some people, but I'm going to read language from the statute about a sexual crime. This is sex assault on a client by a psychotherapist. The definition of this crime is sexual penetration or sexual intrusion on a victim when the actor is a psychotherapist. That is a VRA crime. That would only get a ticket.
Well, wait a minute. If it's a VRA crime, then that bill prohibiting it, this thing doesn't apply to it.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got it backwards. That is a VRA crime, and so the psychotherapist would be arrested. But assume that the perpetrator is not a psychotherapist, but an acupuncturist. Another crime, if a person is an acupuncturist, and this is described in the same language, sexual intrusion or penetration by an acupuncturist on a patient, that is not a VRA crime. A person would only get a ticket.
Crazy.
So,
crazy. The other thing it says, by the way, is that you can be taken to jail on these charges if the arresting officer documents a, quote, reasonable suspicion to conclude the person poses a threat to the safety of another absent custodial arrest. But wait, and you might be getting this, Ray. Then there's another section that says even if they do that, the court is prohibited by law from making them post a monetary bond.
That's
for
correct.
That violation of law. So even though the officer said, hey, I got to take you into custody because I think you pose a threat to the safety of another, the court may not impose a monetary bond for you to get out of jail. They're going to cut you loose.
And so whether a person is given a ticket or arrested, once they if they are arrested, the court cannot impose monetary bail. Now, there is a problem with monetary bail. It is unfair to poor people. A rich person, if the judge says, oh, it's $100,000 bail, and the person say, okay, I'll write a check for that, that person gets out. Somebody who can't even a person who would pay a bail bondsman would have to pay $10,000 on a $100,000 bond. Lots of people can't afford that. There was a bill last spring at this time. There was a bill to eliminate cash bail, but it had a mechanism for ensuring that people got to hearings. There would be a state employee who was responsible for making sure that the suspect got there. This bill does not have any mechanism. So if a person gets a summons to appear Or they get an arrest, they get released without bail, and are given a summons, a ticket, and they don't show up. Now, think about the implications of the suspect not showing up at a hearing. The judge has to be there, the bailiff, the court recorder, all paid by taxpayer expense. If the victim wants to come, they have to take a day off work. If they live out of state, they have to fly in at their own expense. All of those people are there expecting a hearing, but if the suspect doesn't show up, they don't hold the hearing.
It's by the way, Ray, it's not just the expense to the state, which is real, but it's like if someone stole your car, not only would they not be taken to jail under this bill, but you're told, hey, there's a court date, and the DA's office communicates with you and say, Ray, come on in here and be part of this process. We think this case is going to resolve. We'd love your input. You take time off of your life to come into court. The defendant says, I'm too tired, too busy, too stupid, too unwilling to come into court to address this. When they fail to appear right now, a warrant issues for their arrest, and they get arrested and they get brought in. And they might have to stay in jail till the next court appearance because they can't seem to come to court. Under this bill, they get to skip court intentionally three times before the court is allowed to impose any sort of monetary bail on them. Can you imagine?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
You could come to court as a victim three times, and this guy could blow it off every time, like, not a big deal to me. I don't really care. And every single time, the court would be prohibited from keeping him in jail on a cash bond or any kind of monetary bond. They'd be able to get out on their own signature.
And if a person has skipped three times, when the judge finally issues a warrant, the person who skipped three times is probably not skipping just because they overslept. They probably are not going to be found.
Well, they might be found. We've had a lot of people at FTA, but I mean, this is getting to the point where what we really need to do is the legislature should just stop pretending what its goal is and to just dismantle the criminal justice system entirely and treat it like a civil system. Treat crimes like small claims court, and just if people want to show up, great. If they don't, we'll issue a default judgment we'll never, ever collect on. There are no ramifications or consequences for criminal conduct, and victims be damned. And oh, by the way, if you thought, well, hell, I'll just protect myself by through the Second Amendment, like I'll protect my home or my business, good luck, because that thing's being whittled away too. Ray, I don't understand how something like this can build up traction under the Gold Dome. Have you had conversations with legislators?
Yes, and I've testified. And this bill just passed the Senate Judiciary Committee.
I'm shocked.
So it is coming up on the Senate floor, which is the best chance to stop it. We have counted votes, and we need two more senators to vote against it to kill it. So if anyone out there listening wants to help, they should contact all of their state senators.
Have you had a conversation? It should be amended. I mean, some of the ideas here aren't horrible, but I mean, it should be amended. Have you had any conversations with Senator Rhonda Fields?
Yes, but not recently.
You should
and
try
I,
that.
I expect that she will vote against this bill.
I hope so.
We are counting on that, but we need two more senators essentially. While I have you on the phone, I was going to mention the most egregious Class 4 felony that would just merit a ticket is engaging in a riot. If you think about what happened at our national capital on January the 6th, 800 people invaded the building, fought their way in, chanted, "Kill Mike Pence," killed one peace officer, injured a bunch of others, one committed suicide, ransacked offices. The FBI has arrested 300 of those people. If they had done that in Colorado to our state capitol, those 300 people would have gotten tickets.
Well, maybe, because the people that trashed the state capitol over a period of many, many evenings didn't even get a ticket here in Denver. As you know, unrelated to this law, law enforcement just sort of shrugged and said, well, we're just going to tolerate it.
Well, it's in defense of local law enforcement. Local law enforcement was kind of like the Capitol Police. If you're outnumbered 100 to 1, it's very difficult to make arrests. But the arrests, you know, after the fact at the National Capitol, they've arrested 300 people.
And I get that, and I encourage that, by the way. But, Ray, I'd say in taking up the position against you, they, unlike the Capitol, the U.S. Capitol, where it was a one-day surge and then it was over, maybe unpredictable, we're talking about day in, day out, evening in, evening out, the trashing of businesses and the state capitol. So that argument about, hey, we were undermanned, I think that works the first day. After that, that's just poor leadership, poor decision-making. But, Ray, I got to let you go because I got to end this segment, but I'd love to have you back on to talk about the progress of these bills.
I would love it.
Ray, thank you for your time.
I look forward to it.
Thank you for your time on this. When we come back, we are going to wrap it up. I got a couple things I got to read to you, talk to you about, and then I'm going to turn it over to Randy Liberty Esquire Corcoran, who I've just now seen. He has braved the snowstorm, which, according to my weather app, has now moved from 30% chance of snow at 6 a.m. to 60% chance of snow at 10 a.m. So if you are out there gauging your day by what's going on outside, you're missing out. Like, I can see some moisture accumulating on the street right now, but I still wouldn't call this an epic snowstorm. Maybe it's going to sneak up and club us like a baby harp seal. I don't know. When we come back, we'll wrap up here with a couple other segments. Until that time, George Brockler on The George Show at 710 KNUS.
The George Show with George Brockler on News Talk 710 KNUS.
G to the B to the back here on the George Brockler Show. Well, actually, it's the George Show. I am George Brockler. Maybe I'm just George and it's the George Brockler. We'll have to make that change. 710 KNUS. Listen, Keith Swarinski is the CEO of PIN Business Network. I've told you about PIN before. Friend of the show. They've been huge supporters. I can't thank them enough for what they've done for us. But really, you want to be in a position to thank them for what they can do for you. The PIN Business Network uses the power of data and technology to help clients identify target audiences and convert them into more customers. Now, listen, I've been to their place now twice as they've grown into these bigger and bigger and more awesome and technologically advanced studios. The reason they have to be their studios, offices, is because they have this proprietary system of data collection. And by proprietary, I mean nobody else has this, that is unmatched in the state of Colorado, maybe even beyond that, but I'm happy to say for the state of Colorado. So if you need help navigating your customer acquisition and keeping your business growing, you got to call these guys. PIN believes in the power of community. That's why they created the online environment where people can discover, promote, engage, and interact, which is huge, with local businesses to build a stronger, more connected community. PIN provides digital marketing solutions for your business that are driven by data and inspired by the belief of the power in numbers, P-I-N, power in numbers. They can positively impact the way you do business and make it better and bigger. Call them today, 866-233-5705, 866-233-5705, or visit them at pinbusinessnetwork.com, pinbusinessnetwork.com for more information. When you reach out to them, by the way, and you get a person, and you will, please tell him, hey, I heard about you on The George Show. That dude cannot stop singing your praises. Now, got to do something else here. You know that March 20th is special. It's special because our governor of the state of Colorado, a guy named Jared Polis, has declared that day, a week from today, to be Meat Out Day, a statewide meat-free holiday in Colorado. And if you haven't seen his proclamation yet, it may be online. I couldn't find it when I looked. But it's one that really goes out of its way to disparage a huge part of our agricultural economy, which is a huge part of our state economy, by saying that all animal-based products are bad for you and that you should instead focus on, I believe, a lot of bean curd and tofu and twigs and berries. Nonetheless, steaks have been canceled, pork chops canceled, buffalo rings canceled. And if you've ever watched a show on Netflix called Schitt's Creek, I want to take up the mom's accent. Buffalo wings canceled. In honor of Polis's most unpopular proclamation, this station, 710 KNUS, is giving you the chance to win the ultimate in meat preparation. And if you just stopped right there, my God, your imagination could run wild. A brand new Traeger pellet grill and smoker with Wi-Fi. That matters. The Wi-Fi matters. Guaranteed to seal in the juices and make your meat marvelous. It's the 710 KNUS. Smoke them if you got them giveaway. Go to 710KNUS.com to sign up for your chance to win. As it turns out, I don't think I'm lawfully authorized to compete. I'd sure like to. It doesn't mean my kids can't. I at least have one 18-year-old. That Traeger thing is phenomenal. I talked about it the last hour when I read this. A buddy of mine has one of these things. He cooks from inside his house, basically. He just has to truck the meat out there, press a little button. This thing does all the thinking for him, tells him when he needs to do this, that, and the other. And I say this very gently and appropriately, his meat is tremendous. Really, it's quite tasty. Listen, coming up very, very quickly here, we're going to be joined by Randy Liberty Esquire Corcoran. He may be talking about meat. I don't know. But I'm certain that whatever he's talking about, he's the best educated dude on the radio to talk about it. Now, for me, I want to thank Big Matt behind the glass for coming in on this horrible blizzard. I don't know how you navigated these bone dry roads with the prospect of snow falling sometime between 6 a.m. today and next month. I think that's really what the meteorologists have changed to. I also want to thank Kristen Strom for being our first guest out of the gate from Common Sense Institute. We also had Chris Brown on at a different time, different hour to talk about the studies they're doing. If you're looking for nonpartisan, unbiased, just straight up by the numbers economics on some of the stuff that's going on in the state of Colorado, like the state we're in right now, or where we're going to be if one of these public option things passes, you got to go to their website at Common Sense Institute Co., C-O for Colorado. .org and check this stuff out. We also had on Cindy Graham to talk about a disastrous bill, in my opinion, for holding people accountable for the worst of the worst crimes. I'm going to tell you, I'm checking in to see whether or not it applies to the Aurora Theater shooter, whether they're going to let this guy out of prison after 28 years for having murdered only 12 people and trying to kill 70 others. That's all. And then we had on Ray Harlan to talk to us about another crazy bill that has just gotten out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I'm going to check to see if that's a party line vote. I should have asked Ray. That is going to seek to reduce jail populations by taking people who victimize you by stealing your car, extorting you, burning something of yours, breaking into your business, and a whole host of other crimes by treating those like traffic offenses where you can only get a ticket. And if you find your way into jail because you pose a risk to others, you cannot have a monetary bail imposed upon you. That is a formula for keeping Colorado safe. Long pause. That's total sarcasm right there. Next week, I'll be joining you on Meat Out Day. Maybe we'll bring in some bacon products, some other things to eat while we're on the radio. Don't know yet. Be careful out there. If it ever does snow today, good luck. Stay inside. Stay warm. Drive safely. Until that time, this is George Brockler on The George Show. Good luck to my daughter, Amanda, at the state competition this morning. It's 710 KNUS.